from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Yesterday, the president laid out a plan to help hard-pressed Americans refinance their mortgages. But earlier this week, we had a shocker on the mortgage front. A report from NPR and ProPublica that Freddie Mac bet billions against homeowners getting much-needed mortgage relief, against refinancing. That report left people across the country incredulous, outraged. Is even taxpayer-owned high finance that stacked against the little guy, was the question. We'll ask and look at new plans for relief. This hour on Point, Freddie Mac and your mortgage. You can join the conversation. What happened here? Is this Freddie Mac responsibly trying to pay down its taxpayer bailout? Is this finance hotshots looking to make a juicy bonus in your troubles? Be damned. You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today are the reporters who broke the story this week from NPR and ProPublica. Headline, Freddie Mac bets against American homeowners. Chris Arnold is with me in the studio, NPR correspondent who's been covering the troubled housing market. Chris Arnold, thanks for coming in. Welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Absolutely.
And with us from New York is Jesse Eisinger, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter now covering Wall Street and finance for the nonprofit investigative journalism organization ProPublica. Jesse Eisinger, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
There's so much to look at here, but let's try and cut to the chase on one front right away. Okay, I think everybody's heard this on NPR at this point. Here's Freddie Mac betting against making a big – how many billion-dollar bet?
With three and a half, now we've learned a $5 billion bet that's tied to somewhere between $20 and $30 billion worth of home loans.
That those borrowers would not refinance at a better mortgage rate. And, of course, we have much better mortgage rates now than we had before. Freddie Mac then, around the same time – putting steps in place that would make it harder for homeowners to refinance. That looks bad. They say there's no connection.
Correct.
But here's the question. They get bonuses. Congress was all upset last year, the guys who handle the financial side of Freddie Mac's business, because they got something like, in total, $13 million in bonuses over there. They're doing all right on the bonus front. Not as great as they once did when the whole thing was going down the tubes. But are there bonuses connected just to the to this hedging and the finance side of this equation, Chris? I mean, is that how these guys make their bonus? By, you know, never mind what happens to the homeowner, let's look at what happens to the balance sheet on the other side of the business.
Well, the official answer there is no. If you go into the documents that explain compensation at Freddie Mac, mm-hmm. they are supposed to be, even the guys in the capital markets side and in the retained portfolio side, the guys that make these investments, they are supposed to get bonuses based on keeping the mortgage market liquid, you know, allowing the housing market to function well. At the same time, though, when these trades were going on, these guys who were being compensated and getting bonuses were getting almost the highest bonus they could get, when arguably some of these investments were counter to those goals.
Well, I mean, Jesse, let me put it to you. Here's the mission is to look out for liquidity and look out for the homeowner, in addition to be financially responsible about this huge bailout. But those things look to be in conflict. They are kind of a conflict of interest mission-wise in this case, Jesse. So, you know, were the guys on the finance side here really incented to look out for the homeowner, only incented to look out for the sort of finance bottom line, homeowner be damned?
Right. This has been the conflict of interest at the heart of these companies for a long time, and it's made the companies untenable in some ways. What these transactions did, is exacerbate and concentrate that conflict of interest. And the trading side certainly doesn't have any incentive to make home loans more available to people, especially when they're refinancing, because that really hurts the value in the short term of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae's portfolio. So no, the traders don't particularly have an incentive. They kind of have a backdoor incentive to keep things liquid and steady and provide kind of constant buying and selling of mortgages and mortgage-backed securities to make these things more available. But that often becomes a conflict when they don't want to take losses.
Now, there's a kind of structural conflict here, but they're saying very loud and clear in their statements in response to your story that we've got a kind of wall between these two sides of our operation, and one does not and did not influence the other. Yes, they were looking to make money by not having people refinance at lower rates, but no, that had nothing to do with them changing their policy to make that harder. Is that credible, Chris?
Well, I think we have to, until we can prove otherwise, accept that, because we certainly haven't found anything to show that that's not true.
But they would each know what the other was doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you look at the timing of some of these trades where Jesse might be able to help me with some of the dates. But essentially, you know, late on Thanksgiving Eve, you know, mm-hmm. literally,
yeah.
Freddie Mac.
When nobody's paying attention.
When nobody's
we're
paying
all
attention.
Tryptophan dozing.
Yeah. And another exactly another time, I think, around Christmas. That's when Freddie Mac chose to announce some of this credit tightening. And, you know, maybe they don't want to attract a lot of attention. They're making
it harder. That is making it harder to refinance.
To refinance. Mm-hmm. But immediately after that, the investment side of the business would go into the market and make a lot of these trades.
So, right. And
I'm just a layman here. But, you know,
sure.
You can talk about a wall all you want. I'm sitting on the other side of the wall. I read the change in policy that if you just look at it as a trader, it looks like an opportunity.
Exactly. I mean, there are two issues here that raise questions. One is that the traders could be interpreting this information and putting on these trades, which then is a feedback loop because the entire company becomes more concentrated on these bets and wants to avoid any problems and any losses. The second thing is that there's upper management here at the company, and then there, and we're going to get into this, I'm sure, mm-hmm. a federal agency that oversees these companies. Now, they can see into both sides of the portfolio. So they can see what the left hand is doing and what the right hand is doing.
And they're ultimately
in
charge.
Responsibility.
Not exactly. Just responsible, but they're kind of calling the shots. They're looking over the shoulder of these operations.
Right. So they should certainly be addressing these issues.
So how does this sort out? I mean, is it Maybe what's going on here is very responsible. They've got a huge debt to the American public after the gigantic, biggest ever, I think, bailout between Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You know, zillions of billions here. They're supposed to pay that back, and they haven't yet, right? So they got a big responsibility
sure,
there
and
to maybe to hedge, to watch out. But on the other hand, you've got millions of Americans really struggling. I mean, it's the heart of their life, their home, their family's place to live that's on the line here in the middle of a terrible recession.
And this is what Jesse's talking about. This is a fundamental conflict of interest for Fannie and Freddie because Freddie Mac is two companies. Freddie Mac, on the one hand, is a company that guarantees mortgages, allows the mortgage market to work well, allows people to get home loans. On the other hand, they have a hedge fund inside of the company worth $600-700 billion. And the problem here is if this was a Wall Street hedge fund that was making bets mm-hmm. against homeowners, that, you know, it wouldn't be a friendly bet. But, you know, that's the way the economy works. It'd be fine. But we're talking about a company that controls the ability to refinance, owned by taxpayers, and betting against the homeowner being able to refinance.
And in that regard, oh, yes.
Clip 2.
We've got a lot of people talking about this and not happy about it. We heard some of them on NPR this morning. Steve Inskeep talking with Johnny Isaacson. This is Republican U.S. Senator from Georgia, criticizing Freddie Mac's action, saying he wanted an explanation. And he's talking here about the head of the FHFA, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, that is Edward DeMarco.
I think Mr. DeMarco needs to come forward and tell us what did happen. We have a situation that's obviously at best unsavory and at worst immoral. And I think the agency's responsibility is to come forward and tell us what happened and why it happened. And if this is true, to correct it.
Unsavory at best. I mean, what's the relationship here, Jesse, between Ed DeMarco, first of all, and let's say the White House?
Tense. Frustrated.
He's a temporary acting head of the, not so temporary anymore, but he's acting director of this very powerful agency.
Exactly. The Bush appointed head stepped down and DeMarco took over as acting director. And then the White House tried to put in somebody in late 2010 who then withdrew, basically effectively blocked by Republicans. And DeMarco has been there at his role, emphasizing this issue of taxpayer profits, which actually is he's probably very possibly misreading this situation and doing something that may be in the short-term interest of Fannie and Freddie but not the long-term interest, and we can explain that later. But the Obama administration has clearly been frustrated and unable to get rid of him and unable to appoint somebody who would be more supportive of their policies.
And Barbara Boxer saying in that same interview, she's had meetings with DeMarco that were really, really intense. Is that about this? What are you after, taxpayer profits or homeowner relief?
Yeah. Do we have that clip? We're going to try to pull that up.
Well, sure. We can play it right here. Here's Barbara Boxer talking about this meeting. Well, she doesn't really specify, but very, very tense with DeMarco.
I had asked him to meet with me, and it just turned into an absolute row. He got his back up. This is not his interest. His interest is making sure Fannie and Freddie do well financially. He didn't have any motivation that I could see to help people. It was the worst meeting I've ever had in my life, honestly. And I know that he had to approve of these derivatives. He approves of everything Fannie and Freddie does.
Okay, there's Barbara Boxer's telling of that meeting, the worst meeting she's had in her life.
It's pretty dramatic.
How can there be that much tension? They've got a dual mandate. So everybody has to embrace both sides of it, don't they?
Well, Boxer and Isaacson, and again, it's a Democrat and Republican coming together. Isaacson's a very senior, very reasonable politician. He comes out of the mortgage industry, and they've been pushing, and the FHFA has not been doing what they want them to do.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the shocking report of Freddie Mac betting against relief for American homeowners. And what's up with our taxpayer-owned lords of mortgage finance? You can join the conversation today. NPR and ProPublica reporting about this week. It has really stirred up a hornet's nest here, but you've got to listen very carefully to understand what's going on. On the other hand, maybe it's not so mysterious. Chris Arnold is with us from NPR. He's been covering all this. Jesse Eisinger with ProPublica is with us as well today from New York. Chris, with me here in the studio. The president talking about this whole crisis striking right at the heart of this country.
This housing crisis struck right at the heart of what it means to be middle class in America, our homes, the place where we invest our nest egg, the place where we raise our family, the place where we plant roots in a community, the place where we build memories.
The place where we build memories, and that is if you still got it. How many Americans have lost their homes at this point? Well, you know, it's a lot. And here, one of the outfits that's supposed to be helping. Now, what helping means can be complicated, but maybe not that complicated. Chris Arnold, Jesse Eisinger, stand by, joining us right now from New York City, Christopher Mayer. He's professor of real estate at Columbia Business School, co-director of the Center for Business Law and Public Policy at Columbia. He's been arguing for a big plan to offer mortgage refinancing to millions of American homeowners for several years now. We've talked with him about it. Chris Mayer, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hey, great to talk with you.
We'll look at what the president's proposing here right now, but what about this story, Freddie Mac, and this what looks like a big conflict of interest? I mean, you know this world well. How do you judge what happened here?
Well, the first thing to say is that I kind of find it odd for people to argue that it's not a conflict of interest because, you know, by definition, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are in two businesses, and I should not imply that Fannie Mae has been involved in these kinds of activities. So if we talk about Freddie Mac, there are two businesses. One of them is they have guaranteed a bunch of mortgages. So they're sort of like an insurance company and should try and minimize the losses. The other business is they own a bunch of mortgages. Now, if you were only in the guarantee business, you would always want to refinance every mortgage that's out there because by refinancing those mortgages, you lower people's payments and you reduce their defaults.
Yep.
And particularly if you think that you have, you know, that you and your sister organization have half of all the defaults that you're guaranteeing, you would especially want to do things that prevent lots of defaults and, you know, drive down house prices. So on
but
one
that's
hand,
only half of their mission. Maybe it's wrong to beat up on them because we've given them a dual mission. We've given them a kind of conflicted mission.
Well, so I wouldn't say we've given them that. I would say that they built it themselves, which is they acquired these securities. It was not in their mission to acquire them. They did acquire them when they were reporting to private shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
But that the other – you know, if you ignore the portfolio, their other mission – you know, the only reason you wouldn't refinance all the mortgages outstanding is because of the portfolio. And so almost by definition, that tension has to be there.
And when the portfolios of all the stuff they own that they've got to make money on or be in trouble.
Right. So if you sort of pretend like you're not paying attention to the portfolio, then it's just clearly obvious you would refinance all the mortgages. So it has to be the portfolio that is driving a reticence to refinance mortgages.
They say no way. They say no connection. There's a wall between the two. They absolutely don't influence one another. They flat up deny it all week long in response to Chris and Jesse's story. Do you doubt that denial?
I haven't sat in their meetings, so I don't know what the conversations are. But I would say as an outside observer, it seems, you know, outside observers have long calculated this. So whether you look at a report by the CBO, if you look at studies by the Federal Reserve, if you look at analyst reports, they all talk about this tension. And to sort of say that, well, we don't pay attention to that tension at all seems to be to not really be sort of a credible position to take.
Do you believe they're being truthful in their denials?
I can't say whether they're being truthful or not. I'm saying as an outside observer, I don't see anything else other than the portfolio that would cause me not to want to refinance mortgages. And so, you know, that would be my question, which is what else is it? You know, why in November of 2011 did Freddie Mac actually tighten credit?
Chris Arnold, what do you say to that outside observer's observation here?
Yeah, you know, one way to look at this too is to go back to Senator Boxer was describing that lively conversation she had with DeMarco. And according to her account, he said he was much more interested in saving Freddie Mac money or stemming the losses, essentially allowing Freddie Mac to be as profitable a business as it can be, make money. At the same time, if that's true, what Chris is saying is that it's this retained portfolio, this hedge fund side of the business, that's where you'd have losses from refinancing.
Sure.
You know, on the other side of the business, you make money. There's the guarantee fees you charge every time you refinance a loan, and you would decrease the chances of foreclosures and defaults.
But all through this time, and Jesse, let me bring this to you, all through these last few years, there's been all this talk about refinancing, relief is on the way. They talked about doing it for millions and millions of Americans, and it always came up way short of what we were told was being pushed for. And you can't help, again, from the outside looking at this and saying, well, maybe this is the source of the headwind. Because Freddie Mac, at least for one, was betting huge the other way. Maybe this is why we haven't been able to bring relief. And meanwhile, millions of families out of their homes, lost homes, lives, you know, blown up.
I think it's pretty clear at this point that Freddie and Fannie have been a source of the headwind. I think the banks have been major sources of the headwinds because they take losses on mortgage-backed securities if there are a lot of refinancing. So you've got extremely powerful interests who are pushing against this and mortgage modifications, which has been a disastrous flop by the Bush and Obama administrations, which is slightly different from refinancings. The thing to emphasize here is that there may be a patina of logic to Mr. DeMarco's actions and argument that they're saving taxpayers money by doing this. But it breaks down if you think about it because bonds are very high right now. Interest rates are very low, which means bond prices are extremely high, which means you want to sell now. You want to be a seller. You can make a lot of money. The market is demanding the product that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae have on their have in their coffers, and they would pay a high price for it, and this would reduce their risk. So that all adds up to a big bonanza potentially for taxpayers. But what Freddie Mac is doing is retaining these things in a way that's not very transparent, and taking a lot of risk on that might actually redound badly, hurt the taxpayers in the end.
And what to clarify what Jesse's saying is he's saying, you know, one way for DeMarco and Fannie and Freddie to make money or to stem their losses would be to sell off these big portfolios, sell these mortgage-backed securities, yeah, have these loans.
Get
because
out of that.
There's a good price for that right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can get into the
mandate.
And additionally, that's
Mayor, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this – when you think about it, they're – you know, the GSEs have – you know, they often talk about sort of protecting the taxpayers
GSEs?
And conserving and preserving assets. Yes, the or the FHFA, the conservator.
The government-sponsored entities, which are Fannie and Freddie.
Right.
So there is, in fact, a mandate to conserve and preserve assets. But there are specific targets that they need to meet. So they are actually mandated to reduce the size of their portfolio. But there are two other mandates that no one ever talks about that are equally important. Mm-hmm. One of them is to ensure a stable and efficient mortgage market. And the second is to reduce risk. And creating highly leveraged derivatives that are very hard to sell, make it really hard to wind down. The fact that those derivatives are in the hands of an entity that actually has control over refinancing makes the market less stable and less efficient, and increases taxpayer risk. And so even if one were to look at the mandates that these organizations operate under, this doesn't even really fit under all of those mandates. Lots of people just talk about paying back taxpayers, but that's one of only three.
Absolutely. And I don't know, maybe it's an impossible thing to ride herd on. We've got a lot of listener response here. You know, Jeff says, this has to stop. Enough is enough. The culture of Wall Street is infecting the fabric of our society, and it's out of control. You got others who are saying, you know, whatever happened to buy the people for the people? How's America not become a kleptocracy? But then another listener says, this is what happens when you create quasi-governmental private corporations. Any private corporation that's supposed to be responsible for anything other than the bottom line is going to have a direct conflict of interest, period. Let's go to the phones. Eliza in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Eliza, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for covering this really completely outraging story. And I'd just like to back up from the disgusting details of this particular story and ask, why on earth are hedge funds still legal? They are completely non-productive betting, and they were an integral part of the crash of our entire economy. It just seems like our financial system is rotten to the core, and the government has done nothing to fix this.
Well, Eliza, I appreciate your call. I mean, you're backing way, way up there, but okay, I'll throw it to Christopher Mayer. I mean, you know, here's a citizen who's trying to figure out what's going on with our system? What happened when it crashed? Why are we still struggling with this kind of thing? Is there some mentality in here that's just not good for the whole, good for bonuses for a few? Or, you know, is this an essential part of modern market-driven economies?
So I should first say at this point that I actually serve as an advisor to a hedge fund that's not involved
in
housing-related stuff. So I should say that first. But I would sort of say that, you know, I thought that the comment that you're that the last commenter you had was right, which is, you know, I think in principle we should want financial markets to become more efficient. And the place, you know, we often confuse a free market with efficient capital markets, and they're not the same thing. A lot of the problems that we had in our financial markets were regulated institutions that had enormous conflicts of interest, and used those conflicts of interest in ways that benefited themselves and their managers, but eventually blew up their shareholders and the economy. And I think, you know, if you look at the hedge funds predominantly were not unlike two decades in 1998 when we had problems, the hedge funds didn't sort of blow up the economy. It was really our regulated large financial institutions.
Great, great.
That did that. And so, you know, I think one could make a very credible case that we do need regulation, that we should not be building these very large, financial institutions that have these conflicts of interest. And I think the first thing we ought to do is immediately spin off the portfolios that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have and have a third-party trustee, maybe the New York Fed or, you know, have put
somebody
them out to bid.
Get them out of the conflict of interest business. We got
Just get them out of the conflict of interest. And it seems like nobody should be – if the conservator believes that true, nobody should argue against that point. And then, you know, once we clear out some of the conflicts of interest, then we can sort of have a discussion about what are the right housing policies to have.
Maybe
that's not happening.
Right. Maybe that's what Newt Gingrich advised them to do, but we don't see evidence of it. Mike writes to us, this was a shocking story. Robert says obscene hubris. Jay writes, how does a government that uses taxpayer dollars to bail them out allow this to happen? But then there's that dual or triple mandate. Jerry in Buffalo, New York. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show, but I think this one needs a devil's advocate.
Okay.
And it's certainly an unpopular opinion, but isn't it bottom line just risk management and the lack of transparency? If things were transparent, you could make the causal connection between them driving the fall. But if they were keeping closed how they were managing their risk in a way that I think that maybe they were being appropriate, weren't they really forestalling it?
But Jerry, if the cause and effect or the two parts of this line up sort of within 24 hours of one another or very, very closely, isn't that a kind of evidence in itself?
Hey, it could be.
But we don't know.
It's not necessarily.
Yeah.
Right. Let me sort of take on the risk management piece because that's come up a lot in commentary on this story. And, you know, Jesse may also want to.
And we've got listeners very stern on this saying, come off it, guys. You know, somebody talk about hedge prepayment risk. Talk about, just responsible risk management.
The thing is, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are actually incredibly long on, to put this in sort of more financial terms.
Yep.
They're very, very long prepayment risk because they have all these sort of mortgages that are sitting on their balance sheet, plus they have all these other
– So they're very exposed if Americans get lower mortgage rates.
So if you wanted to hedge that prepayment risk, the last thing you would do is create a concentrated derivative that holds more prepayment risk. So their portfolio is already very long prepayment. And there's no way to hedge out a couple hundred billion dollars of prepayment risk in the markets. So if they were hedging in this, the most they would have done is have hedges on interest rates, not on prepayments. So if you wanted to unwind – and I'm sorry for some of your listeners that I'm getting complicated, but there are probably a few listeners who –
More than many of the blogs who
have sort of made the arguments about this. So one is these derivatives are really a bet on prepayments. If you wanted to do this just to hedge out interest rate risk, you would do it with interest rates, not prepayments. And the second is almost surely if they were hedging, they would have taken the other side of this, which is they would have sold off this risk and held on to the principal portion of these bonds. But of course, they created these and they created what were saleable bonds
and turned them into
highly structured derivatives.
Christopher, we've just got you for another minute. The president's got new plans out there saying, I'm going to make lower rates available to all kinds of Americans. You've pushed for a huge refinancing in this country. Is the president on the right track? Is it likely to happen?
Look, I'm a huge fan of that part of the president's proposal. I think it was a very well thought out proposal, and I did like the line where he said this doesn't require legislation. The FHFA and the GSEs could do this on their own. And I think the president was right about trying to bring back competition into this market. Since the government already has the risk, we want to reduce that risk. And I really liked a part of the proposal which was encouraging people to pay down their mortgages a little more quickly. I thought that was a really, a nice new idea that will help reduce the negative equity out there.
But is it going to happen or is it one more of these, help is on the way and then it doesn't come things?
The problem was they bundled it with this other proposal, which is to cover non-government guaranteed mortgages. And that is a lot more complicated. That's been called debt on arrival in
And that's more risk for the government
Congress.
If he goes out there.
And that's more risk and that's not – It may make sense, but it isn't a no-brainer from a taxpayer perspective the way I think GSE refinancing is.
Chris Mayer at Columbia Business School. Thank you for being with us again, Chris.
Very good to join you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the shocking report this week of Freddie Mac betting against relief for American homeowners. And what's up with our taxpayer-owned lords of mortgage finance when so many Americans are really struggling? Chris Arnold with NPR, Jesse Eisinger with ProPublica broke the story. It's been all over the news, all over the country this week. They are with us this hour. And I should say you can find a link to their piece, the text version, at our website, onpointradio.org. Here's the president in Falls Church, Virginia, yesterday talking about his plan to ease mortgage refinancing.
I am sending Congress a plan that will give every responsible homeowner in America the chance to save about $3,000 a year on their mortgage by refinancing at historically low rates.
If you can get them, the president says he'll help that happen, but we've just been through a stretch, as Chris Arnold and Jesse Eisinger report, where Freddie Mac, who's got his hand right on the lever for a lot of this stuff, sort of had plays on both sides and had billions bet against Americans doing just that kind of financing. John in Amherst writes us here, outrageous doesn't come close to describing the situation. Where are the prosecutions to determine responsibility, assign blame, exact just penalties? On the other side, you've got people saying, well, hey, they had an investment mandate too. With us right now from Kansas City, Missouri, is Bill Black, professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Law. He was a senior federal financial regulator during the S&L crisis. He's author of The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. Professor Black, Bill Black, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you here today.
Hi, Tom.
What do you make of this story? Everybody's just looking at this agog this week. How do you interpret what happened here?
Well, let me take a slightly different whack at it that has more of a historical perspective, mm-hmm. and that also addresses briefly the defense. So the last time inverse floaters became famous...
That's betting against lower mortgage rates in this case, against people taking them out in large numbers.
...was when it helped bring about the Orange County bankruptcy.
Okay.
And in that case, the floaters were sold by a branch of, in essence, the federal government, the Federal Home Loan Banks. Second, this is Freddie's fourth strike. Now, you're not supposed to get four strikes, but in this world you do. And this is strikes that almost entirely happened when Freddie was almost entirely private organization. So, and the first strike is really important to this discussion because it was Freddie and Fannie as well purportedly hedging.
So you're going way back before this crisis to the much earlier ones. You're not talking this fourth strike.
I'm talking about what actually led to this crisis.
Okay.
But yes, this was 1998 through 2003 when the SEC finally caught them in this particular accounting and securities fraud. And it was purporting to hedge using complex financial derivatives and then gaming the numbers, the accounting. And so the other strikes are, of course, the liar's loans, the foreclosure fraud that Fannie and Freddie helped perpetrate. And then this
one. Now this.
So you have an enormous problem with the corporate culture at both Fannie and Freddie.
And as you say, most of that time they were private, but always with that government backing, but the private enough that they could and did make huge, huge money in all these machinations. Individuals did.
Well, yeah, individuals did by often losing money for the company. That's the real conflict of interest. It's between the officers and the interest of the corporation. And so this practice never made sense. And here's the defense, which they put into an article in the American Banker yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense is, well, actually, the FHFA ordered this practice stopped in December.
Right.
But that's not a very good defense, because if this was a good thing to do as a matter of finance, they would have never ordered it stopped.
So it's like pulling your hand out of the cookie jar when mom walks in the kitchen.
Right. So this was something that was nuts, doing these kinds of exotic derivatives that are actually, for technical reasons that your prior guest helped to start explain, are really crummy ways to try to hedge. This strategy made no sense for either objective. But let me just end on the idea that transferring stuff to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York would end conflicts of interest.
You're not buying that.
Hilarious.
But if it made no sense, where was the incentive here? We're trying to figure out what was the motivation. If you say it made no sense, Bill, so give us an incentive profile.
Here's the defense again. Why their defense in the American Banker article is not much of a defense. It says what's really going on is they have A, massive portfolios, which they shouldn't have.
Well, 300-plus billion.
Portfolio, yeah, this is, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of stuff that they didn't sell and transfer the risk to others. They have kept, which is to say we now own it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way,
we bailed them out, and so we own them.
Yes, and we own it to the tune of 79.9%, and that ain't a random number.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was 80%, they'd have to consolidate it for accounting purposes and recognize the losses for federal budgetary purposes. So that's in itself a scam. But their defense is we have so many bad assets in the portfolio that we don't want to sell them and recognize the loss. Well, that is not consistent with the goal of minimizing losses. That's consistent with a goal of minimizing honesty about existing losses, right? And getting our bonuses. And that culture of gaming things, of keeping things opaque, has existed for well over a decade at Fannie and Freddie. It's not due to government. It's due to their corporate culture. And you actually need a strong new leader of the Federal Housing Finance Administration to just rip it out of this organization. And it is, unfortunately, one party that has blocked new leadership. Unfortunately, that's the Republican Party. There was an excellent choice proposed, a person with a really strong track record, Joseph Smith, in North Carolina, who was superb, and there were no reasons to block him, right? It was just pure politics.
Hey, Jesse Eisinger, in New York, how do you read that? There's all this heat around Ed DeMarco, but he's still there. Why?
That's a great question, and it's puzzling because the Republicans have long been attacking the GSEs, these government-sponsored entities.
Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, sure, all over them.
There's been a longstanding resistance from the right, the Wall Street Journal editorial page. And so you would think that they would want to unwind these more quickly and come to – and there actually now is this agreement between the left and the right to attempt to resolve these institutions, which would involve probably unwinding these portfolios as quickly as possible. What these trades do for Freddie is make this entity harder to unwind, a longer-lasting entity. It embeds itself into the financial system and makes it more complicated to unwind. And I just want to emphasize Bill Black's excellent point here, which is, on the one hand, the defense is, this is routine hedging, nothing to worry about. On the other hand, it's, and we stopped this. FHFA says, we stopped this because we saw something inappropriate. Very hard to square those two.
Let me get a call right here from William in Nashville, Tennessee, if I may. William, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy that I see here, and I understand the points that everybody's making,
mm-hmm.
but I see a little bit of a different hypocrisy, which is the flip-flopping on whether we should be giving lots of loans to lots of people and making it tough or hard for them to get them. Because I remember when I bought my first house, it was hard to get a loan. Then they switched. A lot of the liberal groups were threatening to sue, saying that it was discriminatory, that people needed to get financing, they needed to have loans for security, their homes would increase in value. It's American
yep.
dream. And then when the banks started doing that and giving out all these loans, albeit some of them pretty bad loans and so forth, then when they went south on them, they flipped completely around and said, I can't believe you banks loaned all this money to all these people. You're terrible for loaning all this money and all these conditions that you did.
Yep.
So now you're bad. Now we're going to make it really tough for you to borrow money. And now that they've made it tough, they're screaming that they're horrible for making it tough for people to borrow money.
William, let us try to thread that needle if we can. I think we got the point. I mean, Chris Arnold, you're saying we're hearing it left and right now concerned about this. Bill Black goes very hard after the sort of hotshot finance angle on this. But there is the other piece of this, that these same GSEs, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, these were supposed to be tools of greater home ownership and lending all over the place. And that was something that Democrats were pushing.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the caller's point is that, look, things got wild and crazy and too many people got too many loans. What we're talking about here, though, is refinancing loans. And we're talking about refinancing loans that the government already guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something very different. I mean, this is the taxpayers on the hook for these loans by allowing people who are stuck at 6%, 7% to get down to a 3 7/8 percentage mm-hmm. point. I mean, it's the lowest in history. That saves people $400, $500 a month on their mortgage.
Huge for those families and really a kind of stimulus for the whole economy.
Yeah, they have more money in their pockets to go buy refrigerators or whatever they want. So, you know, this is a very different situation that we're talking about.
Well, maybe. But Bill Black, you hear William in Nashville, and he's looking back and saying, you know, that portfolio they built up, that was partly a way of, I guess as he sees it, of trying to cover the cost of this mandate, of also pushing, helping people get loans right across the economic spectrum. Do you buy that, Bill?
No. I mean, historically, it had nothing to do with that. And there is explicit charge in the complaint by the Securities and Exchange Commission back in 2006 that said that Fannie Mae engaged in accounting fraud for the purpose of maximizing executive compensation bonuses. And that's exactly what they did. Nobody ever made any entity make or purchase, and that includes Fannie and Freddie, a liar's loan. And that's where the fraud is overwhelmingly. That's 90% of liar's loans involve fraud, and it was overwhelmingly lenders who put the lies into the liar's loan.
You're talking private lenders.
And, yes, it was overwhelmingly lenders that weren't even subject to the Community Reinvestment
Act. Yeah, these are the Ameriquests, New Centuries, to some degree Countrywide, you know.
Lehman Brothers, you name it.
And now we're all in the mess. Scott in Jamestown, New York. You're on the air. Scott, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm the guy you – hi, Tom.
Hi.
You talked about that – you know, I did everything right. My wife and I did everything right. Got a legit loan. Originally, it was through Countrywide. Now it's Bank of America.
Yeah.
You know, it was a decent rate at the time.
Okay.
Now, you know, I'm long-term unemployed. My wife's working for like two-thirds of what she was making before.
Yeah.
We're not going to save hundreds of dollars on a refi, but nobody will refi us because we don't owe enough money. They say there's not enough meat on the bone, or they want us to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to do paperwork that, when they want to apply something to me, they can press a button and it's done. But me, you know, us, it's thousands of dollars and more time.
So you're the guy, if you could refinance, it would really help you. You're unemployed. She's not making what she made. This would make a difference to you.
We tried HAMP and HARP, and we didn't miss any payments, and we did everything right, and we did not qualify, and it's ridiculous. One guy was actually trying to help us, kept calling us back and say, hey, did you find anybody? But we just don't owe enough. And I'm not going to save $700 a month, but hey, $100 for us, if we could just, I'll give you a couple $100 and turn it into Mac Fanny and let me pay them 3.5%.
So when you heard Chris and Jesse's story this week, what are you thinking, Scott?
I'm thinking, well, you know, it just figures, I'm mostly thinking, why isn't somebody in jail? And I just, you know, because there's finger pointing, and everybody had their fingers in that dirty little pie. Everybody wanted the money. That's all I see. It's like, I just want to give my money to somebody who's willing to help me out.
Yeah, and a little more money in the sugar bowl when things are tough, and things have been tough for a lot of people. Scott, I appreciate your call. I mean, Chris Arnold, that's the man in the street view of what's going on here. This has hit so many people. It's not funny.
No, not at all. And there are, depending on the estimate, Chris Mayer, you had on earlier, thinks there are 20 million Americans in this position who could save, on average, $400 or so dollars a month. That's $4,000, $5,000 a year. For middle-class American families who maybe the spouse is unemployed. I mean, this is not a joke, and there's a lot of people involved. Senators have introduced legislation, and this bottleneck at Fannie Mae is the nexus of it.
Jesse, are you guys blowing that bottleneck up with your reporting this week? Is it going to be changed? Did it already change? Back, you know, we heard late last year they loosened up on some of that tightening they had done around the time that this conflict emerged.
Well, in fact, Freddie, as Chris Mayer said, had slightly tighter restrictions in late 2011 than Fannie Mae under this new HARP plan, the new refinancing plan. And the problem here is that the FHFA said stop doing new trades, but they didn't say unwind these old trades, which unfortunately is very difficult to unwind because they have gotten into this position of owning
trades,
something
as
that
in
so
bets
hard to
against
sell.
Refinancing.
Exactly. These inverse floater mortgage securities that are sitting on Freddie's balance sheet are extremely difficult to sell. And so the fundamental problems are not resolved in any particular way.
Bill Black, we've got just a minute here. What should it look like down there, Freddie Mac's profile in this business? Should it just be gone, or should it have a very different, you know, sort of role profile? What should it look like?
It should sell its portfolio. It should have only a portfolio that consists of things that are in the pipeline when they're creating the securitization process, which is their modern function. And so the portfolio should be tiny. They should take their losses.
And million-dollar bonuses for the people down there, or multi-million?
No, it should be a plain vanilla operation with people making $250,000 a year running the place.
Could they still do their basic function of guaranteeing American mortgages?
They could do it better.
They could do it better.
If they stuck to their knitting, they would do it better, not worse.
Well, Chris Arnold with NPR and Jesse Eisinger with ProPublica, you've got the whole country focused on how this turns out at this point. The reporting is at our website, onpointradio.org. Chris, thank you so much for being here today, Chris Arnold.
Thanks, Tom, absolutely.
And Jesse Eisinger, thank you very much for your time and insights today.
Thank you, Tom.
Bill Black, we'll have you back to keep an eye on this from the university there in Kansas City, Missouri, University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Law. Bill, thank you for your insights today.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.